How many here would like a faith that is worthless? Anyone? We're giving out, we got sale. We got a sale on that one. Discount, big discount, worthless faith. Who wants some? No, none of us want worthless faith, do we? We all want a faith that works, in which that is the whole point of the letter of James. It's all about this doing a faith that begins to make sense, even in the broken world we live in, even amidst the circumstances that go on around us, even as we have to weather our way through this life, and how we begin to be impacted by the effects and the events of the world around us, as well as how we affect and as how we interact with the world that we live in. This is the thing that faith is to be for us. James is laying out for us, in beginning here today and going on through the next couple of chapters, some very practical ways that we can begin to live out a faith that works in the world around us. I'm going to keep my message fairly brief today, but I think it's still helpful for us as we think about reading through this letter of James this summer. And look, I know some of you have taken my challenge to read the letter of James in one sitting. Some of you have decided they wanted to read it and read it day by day. So in 5 days, you've got the entirety of the letter of James completed. One of the things, and I know some of you did that, so good for you. Kudos to you. I'm going to challenge you to do that again this week, whether it be in one sitting or whether it be over a course of 5 days. But also want you to consider another passage of Scripture to read side by side with James this week, just to give a little variety, maybe a little different feel to it all. And that other passage would be Jesus' teaching in the Sermon on the Mount. The Sermon on the Mount, we find it in Matthew 5, 6, and 7, so it's three chapters long. And it's filled with all kinds of different teachings that Jesus taught in this one sermon that is lifted for us, that is the longest sermon that we have. And in the Sermon on the Mount, it is the longest stretch of teaching that we have from Jesus. And in that teaching, there are some things that we are familiar with, the Beatitudes, the Lord's Prayer, a lot of Jesus' teaching on how he kind of redefined what it meant to be followers of the law. But there's a lot of other teachings that go along with it. You know, love your enemies is found here in the Sermon on the Mount. The teaching to not worry is found here in the Sermon on the Mount. The teaching to not judge one another is found here in the Sermon on the Mount. There's a lot of things that Jesus kind of packed into these three short chapters. And the reason I suggest reading it side by side with James is because the Sermon on the Mount is reflected very clearly in the letter of James. More so than any other book in the Bible, James picks up on a lot of the very same themes that Jesus highlighted, that Jesus prioritized when he was teaching in the Sermon on the Mount. We see them kind of recast now in the book of James. I was reading this week, and I noticed as I was getting ready to say, please read this yourselves, is that I found at least five major themes in just chapter one in the book of James that really are rooted in the teachings of Jesus that we find in the Sermon on the Mount. So, got your homework? Okay, Matthew 5, 6, and 7, along with your reading of James. I'm doubling up this week, but it's going to be worth it, so hang in there. One of the interesting things about this connection is that connection as Jesus closes his teaching, his sermon, he tells a story. In the Sermon on the Mount, it concludes with a story that Jesus told. It's not actually a real story, something that actually happened. It is a parable that he taught to make a spiritual point. Now, this parable is called the Parable of the Wise and Foolish Builders. Maybe you've heard it, so maybe you know the point already. But we're going to do a little study of this real quick, and then we'll move in, because it has a point that affects, I think, the whole thrust of what James is about. Jesus taught in the Sermon on the Mount, chapter 7. You'll see the conclusion of it in that the wise and foolish builder says, therefore, everyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice is like a wise man who built his house on a rock. The rain came down, the winds blew, streams rose, and beat against the house, yet it did not fall, because it had a foundation on the rock. Have you guys heard this story before? It's not new to you? Good. So you know there's a second half, right? And this is what makes the story fascinating, is that Jesus takes this story, and you're going to see that as we read the second half, he's going to make some things almost identical, almost word for word. There's going to be part of this is parallel. This is a parallel parable. Don't say that twice real fast. You'll get it mixed up. This is a parallel parable, and it uses that parallelism to highlight the distinction, and the distinction is his point. So the second half goes like this. The second half continues. But everyone who hears these words of mine but does not put them into practice is like a foolish man who built his house on the sand. The rain came down, the streams rose, the winds blew and beat against the house, and it fell with a great crash. So we have two stories. How are they similar? Anyone want to venture, dig into the scriptures with me today? How are they similar? There's at least three primary similarities, and there's probably three primary distinctions, but let's go with similarities first. There's two builders. Each story has a builder. That's exactly right. Okay, another similarity. Okay, that's a distinction, because one would build on the rock and one built on sand. Another similarity first. Storm came. Yeah. Winds blow, or rain falls, winds blow, floods rise, everything beats on the house. Both cases, that's the same. Anything else? I guess it's kind of implied. Builder, he builds a house. Okay, good. Okay, now the distinctions. The foundations are different. There's a different foundation. One is on rock and one is on sand. Another distinction? It's not listening, but it's very close. Putting into practice, right? Because both the person who hears is like the wise builder. The person who hears is like the foolish builder. Person who hears and does is like the wise builder. The person who hears and does not is like the foolish builder. And the final conclusion, of course, is different, right? There's one stands. One is able to withstand whatever life throws its way. But the other is destroyed by the ravages of life. Same ravages, but one is able to withstand. So Jesus' point here in this story, what would we say? That we ought to... Anyone? That's it. So you melded them together. The idea is we need to build on the rock. And Jesus said the rock is putting into practice his words. It's not just being hearers of the word, but doers of the word is the important piece. And that's how Jesus finishes his sermon. The most important sermon he ever preached, this was it. And he concludes with this thought that if you hear these words and you put them into practice, you will be blessed. You will withstand. If you hear these words but you don't put them into practice, you don't accept the change, you will fall flat. And that becomes the message at the conclusion of Jesus' sermon. Now, James picks up on that, and he does something very similar. In fact, there, right in the middle of our verses today, this becomes his theme, that we are to not merely listen to the word, because if we do, if we just listen and not do it, we will be deceiving ourselves, but we actually need to do what it says. This is the key here for James. He is crafting an idea for all of us that as believers, as children of God, that we are invited to live a faith that is going to enable us to, like Jesus said, to withstand whatever life throws our way. But it only happens according to James, but also according to Jesus in the Sermon on the Mount, if we do what the Word says. He's talking to believers like you and me. He's talking to believers in the first century, and he is encouraging them that if you're not seeing these things happening in your life, you need to look at it and begin to readdress your life. Your faith needs to be lived out in a way that affects others. Now, we're going to see two things primarily that happen here. in this passage that say, this is how he begins to say, do you have a faith that is working? And it's going to be defined by two aspects. What is faith? That is the important question, isn't it? We want a faith, not a worthless faith. We want a faith that will last, that will be that which helps us overcome the winds and the rain and the floods and all that beats upon our house. We want a faith that will last. And so what James is doing here for us today is we're seeing he's not saying that you should just have a faith that you get the right answers. It's not that. There is something, there's a way of working out this faith, and we're going to see it worked out in these two different ways. It's not just coming up with the right words or coming up with the right answers. It is about doing the right things. It's not about even, you know, going to church. Not that church is the wrong thing, but that's not what earns us into heaven. It is about doing these things that begin to show that the faith we have is transforming our life to look something like God's heart, not just our own heart. And so this true faith that he's talking about here is a faith that is expressed in two ways. One, it's expressed in how we care for others. He starts off in verse 21. Dear brothers and sisters, take note of this. Everyone should be quick to listen, slow to speak, slow to become angry. Because human anger does not produce the righteousness that God desires. Same thing here. He's going to flip it around and say something very similar. If we have a growing faith, it will be seen in the way that we listen to others. It will be seen in the way we hear others. And it will be seen in the way that we're able to restrain ourselves from reacting with violence and anger to the situations around us. It means that our faith, if it is real, is going to begin to demonstrate itself in the way we interact with one another. The next verse says we need to also avoid the moral filth of the world we live in. If we go to the end of the chapter that we were looking at, it says basically the same thing. The religion that God desires is a religion that will look after orphans, look after widows, look after those who are in distress, and to keep oneself from being polluted by the world. He basically starts this section next by saying how we interact with others and how we avoid the moral filth of the world, how we interact with others, especially those who are vulnerable around us, how we care for those around us who are in need. These are the things that define a real faith. Again, not that he is trying to say this is how you are saved. He's not talking about a saving faith. He's talking about a life-changing faith. The saving faith still means that we need to put our trust in Jesus. Saving faith means we still need to come to understand the gift that God has given to us. The saving faith means that we still need to come to find our place in God's plan for us. But this life-changing faith that James is leading us to is going to be revealed in how we interact with others, whether it be in caring for them, listening to them, respecting them, not having to show how right we are, how wrong they are, or not getting angry all the time when we don't find ourselves in agreement. And it also means that we look out for those who are vulnerable. No one more vulnerable in the first century than a widow or an orphan. In our world today, it may be a little bit different, but there are still those who are hurting around us. And he says, these are the ones we need to look after. And if we're able to do that, if we're able to take this faith, this grace which God has given to us, and begin to let it to reflect out to those around us, then we're having that faith which will stand. If we're simply wanting to take that faith, that grace of God, and hoard it for ourselves, hold on to it, and not be that which then reflects that grace out to the world, then we are going to be like the house that falls, because we were not doing what we are called to do, which is be hearers of the word, but also then doers. We're going to move forward into a couple of ways that we're going to look at how it is we interact with others and how our faith really interacts with what we do in the weeks ahead as we move into chapter 2 and into chapter 3. But I just want to start here. This is our This is our place. Finally, at the beginning of it, because I wanted to touch on this first verse, it says that we need to get rid of all moral filth and the evil that is prevalent. Yeah, we get that. There's a lot of evil prevalent. But we need to humbly accept the word planted in you, which can save you. And again, I love the illustration here that he is using this very graphically, saying, just like a seed is planted in a garden, that the word of God has been planted in us as followers of Jesus. So we need to do what we would do for the seed. If you have a seed and you want it to grow, you're going to tend it. You're going to take care of it. You're going to weed around it. You're going to nurture it, water it, fertilize it, do all these things so that that seed can become a plant, can flourish, can bless, and produce. That's what he says our faith needs to be too. Good that we have the seed. It's been planted in us. It is time for us to nurture it, to weed around it, to water it, to feed it, to let it grow so that it can flourish, it can become beautiful, and it can produce in the way that it reaches and touches others. So that's our start here today. We'll continue on as we move into James 2 next week.